Hello, I'm Ziad Alhambali. This is number 0154, the Stuff File program with Peter Antonio Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0154. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, is back. He's on to talk about space and science, and this time it's about the new Mars rover, which is about to land.
It's going to have a suite of 10 instruments aboard, most of them designed to search for the evidence of habitability of Mars, life on Mars, the chances of life, seeing if water flowed on Mars, where it's going to be landing. It's going to be able to make tracks on the surface of Mars. We're not talking for months, but probably for years, maybe as long as a decade.
Actor Anthony Scordi has written a one-man show that he'll star in called Onassis. What was the attraction to Aristotle Onassis?
I was on set for a movie, and I was speaking with another actor, and he said, you could play Onassis. And after I'd gotten over being offended, because he wasn't the best-looking man in the world, perhaps the most charming, though, I went home and did some research on him and read a couple of biographies and cross-referenced a lot of stuff and realized that a lot of lies have been told about this guy. A lot of truths, but a lot of lies and a lot of assumptions. So I wanted to set the record straight.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Peter always rants about things, including bizarre wedding announcements in the New York Times.
Last week, they had an announcement about a couple that met in the emergency room. She was there for anxiety, he was there for tension. I mean, that shows that's going to be a great marriage. Well, this week's is the fact that this is a couple that met at the ugly sweater party. It seems that somebody had a party, and they announced that the person who comes wearing the ugliest sweater would win some type of prize, maybe a nice-looking sweater.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0154, is Ziad Alhambali, who is a technical engineer at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And I thank you very much, Ziad, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a man spotted dressed in a goat suit, yes, you heard me right, among a herd of wild goats, yes, you still heard me right, in the mountains of Utah, northern Utah to be exact, has wildlife officials worried. Not that they're terribly concerned about his goat lifestyle, more that they are a little bit worried that he could be in serious danger as hunting season is approaching. Phil Douglas of the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources said the person is doing nothing illegal, but he worries the so-called goat man is not aware of the dangers. A hiker spotted the person dressed like a goat among a herd of real live goats. Wildlife officials now just want to talk to the man so that he is aware of the dangers. Well, that was a story that came out a few weeks ago, or actually a few days ago, and I've just learned not too long ago that they did indeed, a few days later, have a chance to talk to him. And the mystery man is a 57-year-old hunter from Southern California. Now, Douglas said the hunter called officials and provided enough information to put their curiosity to rest, although Douglas never asked for a name. The man said that he was preparing for an archery hunt of mountain goats next year and is testing a goat suit. Okay. Douglas said the hunter came to Utah because he heard it's easier to get near goats for training. The man told Douglas that he had no idea he was being watched or photographed before a photo of him in the goat suit went viral. Now, regardless of his plausible explanation, there could be nothing more creepy about a guy dressed as a goat living amongst goats. So let's move on. Most prisoners think of nothing but getting out of jail. However, in Wentworth, North Carolina, 37-year-old Rodney Dwayne Valentine had just been granted his freedom but refused to leave after officers wouldn't give him a ride to a motel. Valentine had been in jail since May 22nd and will now get an extended stay as officers have finally rearrested him for trespassing. He's now being held on a $500 bond and is scheduled to appear in court on August the 9th. Okay, here's the part I don't get. The charge is trespassing, so they're going to hold him in the very place he is charged with trespassing in. That's confusing. Scientists from Lund University Primate Research Station in Sweden announced that they have evidence that chimpanzees are able to delay using weapons they encounter, hide them, and retrieve them later for use against foes, thus confirming the inevitable takeover of our world, which will one day become the planet of the apes. In this case, the weapons were stones and chunks of concrete the apes had collected, and the foes were visitors to the zoo who annoyed the chimps. According to the researchers, the 33-year-old chimp by the name of Santino took pains to hide the weapons in locations where they could be accessed easily for the element of surprise against the visitors. Okay, in the movie, his name was Caesar. Better start brushing up on your best "get your hands off him, you damn dirty ape" line, because you might need it. And by the way, when you're watching the apes, don't take your eyes off the cats, because as you know, if you listen to the show long enough, they're the ones who you should really be watching out for. Anyway, we have time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest on the program. In Port Orange, Florida, 30-year-old John Pardis accidentally shot himself in the hand and asked police to come to his house to make his handgun safe. That was an unfortunate request because John apparently forgot about the giant marijuana growing operation he had on the second floor of his home. Pardis told police he accidentally shot himself while handling a .22 caliber handgun that he was unfamiliar with and did not know how to make it safe. After he was treated at a hospital, officers followed him and his wife, Kimberly, home, where Kimberly gave Port Orange police consent to go in the house where the shooting took place and unload the guns and conduct an investigation. When police entered the house, they were smacked with the overwhelming smell of marijuana, and on the second floor discovered a room with a foil blanket on the floor with marijuana on it. In a closet, marijuana trees were hanging, drying out. In another room, police found a tent with marijuana plants in it. The tent was rigged up with an irrigation system, ultraviolet lights, and other equipment needed to make an indoor grow house operational. Police discovered 46 marijuana plants in total. The couple was arrested and were each charged with cultivation of marijuana, possession or use of narcotic paraphernalia, and possession of marijuana. Well, but look at the bright side in all this. At least now, their guns are safe. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Curiosity is the name of the latest Mars rover that is about to land on the Red Planet. And joining us via Skype-to-Skype communication is Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, who is here once again to talk about space and space exploration. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
So, when does Curiosity land on the Red Planet?
Well, it's scheduled to land in the very early morning hours of August 6th, basically Monday morning. And that's about 1:35 Eastern time is the exact landing, touchdown time. And everybody, I can tell you at NASA, all the engineers and scientists that have worked on this mission for over a decade are sitting on pins and needles now, waiting for those final few terrorizing minutes of it landing. So everything so far has been going great, but those last 7 minutes as it touches down are really the most critical for the entire mission.
So this is the latest generation of rovers. So how does this differ from the rovers that are up there before? What can this do that they couldn't?
Oh my goodness. This is a very, very different beast that we've ever seen on any other planet that we've taken. You know, a machine like this. This is, it weighs 2,000 pounds. It's a robot that weighs, you know, so much more. And the size, it's not just the weight, but it's about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. And nearly, you know, twice the size of the rovers that we've seen on Mars for the last 7 years, Spirit and Opportunity. And this one is also has a nuclear generator aboard, an electrical generator that's powered by nuclear decay. And what that means is that as this radioactive material decays, it produces heat, which is transferred into electricity. And this allows the rover basically to have power 24 hours a day. And that's a very big difference from previous rovers, because those previous rovers were both Spirit and Opportunity. And even the one before that, Pathfinder, back in 1997, the one that was the size of a microwave oven, all of those were solar panel operated. So they actually got their power from the sun, which limited the amount of instruments that scientists could put on board, the scientific instruments. And so this one is a real powerhouse of a rover. It's going to have a suite of 10 instruments aboard, most of them designed to search for the evidence of habitability of Mars, of life on Mars, the chances of life, seeing if water flowed on Mars, where it's going to be landing in a very large crater called Gale Crater, in the southern hemisphere of Mars. And it's going to be able to make tracks on the surface of Mars. We're not talking for months, but probably for years, maybe as long as a decade. There may be enough electricity in this mission generated by this nuclear power on board, so that it can continue exploring the red planet for many years to come.
Now, the previous rovers, the folks at NASA, really underestimated the length of time that those rovers would be still functioning, vastly underrated. So is there the possibility they could be wrong here too, in the same direction, and then, as you say, it could last a decade, but maybe even longer?
It could. We could see this last longer. I mean, you can just look at, for instance, other missions that use similar power generators. For instance, the Voyager spacecraft that was launched back in 1977, the two Voyager spacecraft that basically encountered all the planets, outer planets from Jupiter out to Neptune, are still going strong 30 plus years later. And they're literally at the outer edge of the solar system, and they're still sending back signals. Now, they're much weaker signals. They don't have as much energy as they used to, like 20 years ago, but they're still sending back data, which are very useful for scientists. So it's kind of amazing to think that we could see, if all goes well with the landing, we could see Curiosity still sending back images and data well past a decade. I think, they're trying to be conservative and say that they want it to last for 2 years, two Earth years. One Martian year is equal to two Earth years. That's what they're hoping they can at least get. But I think, that's a conservative estimate. And I think if everything goes well, this guy is going to be able to keep on chugging for many years. And we thought the Spirit and Opportunity guys were energizer bunnies, but these guys this guy might be way better.
Well, as far as where it's landing, what about the terrain? How different, if at all, is it from where the previous rovers landed?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a really different site to land. It's called Gale Crater. It's a crater that appears to once have housed the lake that was fed by an adjoining ancient river. Also, this crater features a 3 mile high kind of gently sloping mountain near its middle. And it's got all these exposed layers of sediments on the side of this mountain, which make it very interesting for scientists. That's really where this rover is going to be focusing all its interest over the coming years. And they think that these sediments have water-bearing minerals. So, they're trying to follow the signs of water on Mars, because a lot of our evidence points that way back, over a billion years ago, Mars may have been covered with water, a large ocean of water. And the big question is what has happened to all that water on this planet? What went wrong with this planet that it has dried up and its surface has become so barren? We don't know. And so, maybe there was even life on Mars at one point as well. Water is a key ingredient for life as we understand life here on Earth. We know that water in a liquid form is a necessity for life to get a spark and to begin and also to flourish. So right now on the surface of Mars, there's no water whatsoever. If you dig a little bit, and we've seen this with the previous mission, Phoenix, that robot landed near the North Pole of Mars. If you dig a little bit in the ground, you'll see some frozen water ice. And there's even thinking that there may be aquifers underneath, deep underneath the Martian surface, where there's liquid water still flowing. We don't know this. This is still speculation. And this mission is going to be key in helping us further that, you know, shedding some light on and those mysteries of what's happened to all that water.
Technology has, of course, improved since the last rovers were up there. Also, photography has improved. So would we expect even more spectacular pictures of Mars once this rover is up and running?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the eyes of Curiosity, there it's really amazing that this it has a what's called a mast cam. It's basically the rover's workhorse imaging tool. It's going to capture high resolution color pictures and even video of the Martian landscape, and that's what scientists are going to really be studying. And of course, all of us, you know, space geeks out there are just going to be gawking at all these amazing photographs that this mast cam is going to come back. And what it basically consists of, it's on the top of a mast that's about this, you know, as tall as a human being. There's two cameras that are mounted on this mast, and it just rises right above the entire body of the rover. And so the instrument's going to have a very good view of the red planet, all its environment, as the rover sort of chugs through it. And the mast cam images are also going to help the mission team drive and operate Curiosity to tell it where to go, what some of the more interesting targets of opportunity are going to be in front of it. You know, if they may even find evidence of a fossilized life embedded in one of these sedimentary rocks. That would be like an awesome, unbelievable find.
Sounds fascinating indeed. We're just about out of time, but I've got one more question that's totally unrelated. And that is, man has not gone to the moon in well over 30 years now. And I'm just wondering, why have we not sent some sort of probe or rover back to our lunar surface, if only to see what has happened to the stuff that we left there on those previous missions, and maybe do some more scientific research now that we have the technology with robotics to do it that we didn't have during the Apollo missions?
Right. Well, we're actually there are lunar orbiters that are in circling our natural satellite, the moon, which sits about 400,000 kilometers from Earth.
Yeah, but wouldn't a rover be that much more important than something that just circles?
You know, they're right now. Yeah, you could probably get a lot more closer. And there are efforts right now in the private industry to create rovers, create rover missions that will visit potentially these Apollo landing sites really up close. But we have to be careful because these landing sites are considered to be almost national monuments, and so we want to be careful not to disturb them. So there's still some debate on should we actually go and disturb these sites or see them. Right now, we've actually taken photographs of them with the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is NASA's sort of reconnaissance mission of mapping the entire surface of the moon in high definition mode. And we've seen the landing sites. You can actually see the rover tracks. You can see the lunar landing modules. All of that is visible from orbit. But to actually go down there, right now, there are private companies that are trying to build missions, but these cost hundreds of millions of dollars to send a small robotic rover that would have high-definition video capability with 3D video capability, and send that back to be able to have those images live projected in theaters. Imagine here on Earth, like you could go to an IMAX theater with 3D video of watching a live tour of the moon. And that's sort of something, you know, it's sort of a business model that they're working on. But if you look at NASA and other government-run space agencies, there's a big debate. Should we actually go back to the moon, or will we actually go on to asteroids and Mars, just like how the Obama administration right now has sort of outlined? The president has said, you know, let's forget about the moon. Let's continue onward to asteroids and Mars. But there's still a lot of diehard space industry insiders who say the moon makes sense for us to go back because that's the closest destination and safest destination for us to go to.
Always fascinating stuff. Always fascinating to talk to you, sir. People can check out the website, thenightskyguy.com. Thank you, Andrew, once again for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, the Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. And of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to actor Anthony Scordi, who stars in the one-man show that he wrote called Onassis, among other things we'll discuss. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cappy, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. But right now, lots more stuff in the Stuff File news. In Ocala, Florida, a toddler was abandoned at a Walmart after his mother and aunt fled the store that they were accused of stealing from. Investigators say Allison Niemeyer, the child's mother, and her sister, Laura Niemeyer, stuffed Walmart merchandise into the child's diaper bag. However, they later ran from the store, leaving the child behind. Believe it or not, investigators caught up with the pair outside of a dance club the following day. They're both facing theft and child neglect charges. The child has been placed in state custody for the time being. You know, things always seem to happen at Walmart, and this woman definitely is not the mother of the year. And here's another winner of a mother. In Philadelphia, 26-year-old Ashana Clayton was caught on security cameras allegedly shoplifting a package of Pampers diapers from a Pathmark store. Security guards detained Clayton and led her to a security office in the store. But once there, Clayton began to punch, bite, scratch, and kick a 47-year-old female guard in an attempt to escape. The guard was able to grab hold of Clayton's shirt, but Clayton was able to wiggle her way out of the garment and ran through the store and into the parking lot completely topless. A police spokesperson said her breasts were swinging as she ran to the car. Reminds me of a childhood song that I used to know, but let's move on. She managed to get away, and police later found her abandoned vehicle. Clayton, who has 4 prior convictions for retail theft and arrests of aggravated assault and attempted murder on her criminal record, remains on the run, and police are asking the public for any information that could lead to her arrests. Well, just look for the swinging breasts. Anyway, when you're armed with a rifle, it's hard to imagine losing a showdown with a small field mouse But 40-year-old Canadian Dale Whitmell managed to do just that. At a camp near Wawa, Ontario, he tried to crush the rodent with the butt of his rifle. Problem was, he had forgotten the gun was loaded and managed to shoot himself in the forehead. Quite fortunately, the bullet only grazed his forehead and didn't cause any serious injury. Police said that Dale was admitted to and released from the hospital before being charged with careless use of a firearm. To everyone's knowledge, the mouse escaped unscathed and is probably enjoying a lengthy session of hysterical laughter. And bullfighting may be on the wane in some countries because of complaints about cruelty, but in the village of Aprose, Switzerland, there is a replacement each May. Cow fighting contests. That's right. No, not human versus cow. Cow versus cow. Try and keep up. According to a Wall Street Journal dispatch, this is a serious business, especially for Alain Bellet, whose cow Manathan has won the heavyweight title for 3 years running and who follows training regimens worthy of professional athletes, including engaging masseuses. Yes. The action, however, is mostly headbutting plus abundant slobber, reported the journal. And the contest is won when one of the cows loses interest and just wanders away. Bellet pointed out that an obvious additional pleasure in raising champion cows, and I love this quote, "It's still a cow. I can eat her." Well, looks like he has all the angles covered. Moving right along, at first, police thought 36-year-old William Bonner got into a fight with several other patrons at the Alley Kaz Bar in Augusta, Georgia, then had his face burned in retaliation. However, a surveillance video has revealed quite a different story, that Bonner had purposefully had his drinking buddies douse his head with a shot of Bacardi 151 and put a match to it. Bonner had bet his drinking buddies that he could set his face on fire. With his head ablaze, Bonner could be seen running around the bar like a human torch and trying to put out the flames. Unfortunately, he's now in hospital in critical condition. The manager of the Alley Kaz bar had a few words of warning to other patrons who may want to replicate Bonner's bet. Here's a quote. "Do not have your friend pour alcohol on your head and have your other friend light it and think that it's cool in front of women." Unquote. Yes. A police spokesperson said there will be no charges filed in this case as Bonner has already suffered enough. You know, this guy was suffering from two problems at the same time, as far as I'm concerned. One, not being able to handle liquor, and two, a poor choice of friends. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, here's another edition of the Redneck Chronicles. Police in Decatur, Alabama, were called to the home on South Locust Street in May on a report of a gunshot. They found that a 61-year-old man had been drinking beer to ease his toothache and had finally had enough and attempted to eliminate the tooth by shooting his jaw with a .25-caliber pistol. He was hospitalized. The fact that he was simply hospitalized is the thing that surprises me the most in this entire story. Because what I'd like to know is, how come he's not dead? Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Actor Anthony Scordy keeps very busy. You can currently see him in the short film Envelope with Kevin Spacey, and he will also be in the movie Lucky Stiff with Jason Alexander. But he has also written a play that is about to run in Los Angeles starting September 14th. That play is called Onassis, a one-man production about Aristotle Onassis. And Anthony joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, hi. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. You've written this play. You're starring in this play. What is the attraction for you with Aristotle Onassis?
Wow, that's a long answer, but the short version is I was on set for a movie, A Green Story, and I was speaking with another actor during one of the long scenes that we had during one of the breaks, and he said, you could play Onassis, and after I'd gotten over being offended, because he wasn't the best-looking man in the world, perhaps the most charming, though, I went home and did some research on him. And read a couple of biographies and cross-referenced a lot of stuff and realized that a lot of lies have been told about this guy. a lot of truths, but a lot of lies and a lot of assumptions. So I wanted to set the record straight. I'm of Greek heritage as well, and I understand his passion. So, you know, I think that one of the main reasons was actually to set the record straight and try and tell the truth.
You say a lot of truths were told, a lot of lies were told. How did you find the truth?
Well, it's mainly reading between the lines and discovering what I think were ridiculous statements made by people. One book, not implied, but out and out, accused Onassis of being responsible for JFK's assassination because he wanted to be with Jackie Kennedy. Another book I read accused him of being responsible for Bobby Kennedy's assassination for the same, very same reasons. And if you delve into Onassis' life, you'll see that their relationship wasn't that hot from the get-go.
Was it difficult after you decided this was what you wanted to do to mount this production? In other words, did you have a hard time selling the idea of doing a one-man show on Onassis?
I think it took me 2 weeks to write the thing, and it took me another 4 months to rewrite it. Basically, I think people are pretty excited about the project. So it wasn't that difficult to mount it.
What are your hopes and dreams with this particular production? I know you're doing it at the Stella Adler Theater in September, right through until October. Would you like it, for instance, to take you to Broadway?
There's been talk of... I collaborated with another writer who mentored me through it. He's had shows on off-Broadway. He's written other one-man shows. And yes, I would love it to go to off-Broadway. And I think it has the legs to go to Broadway, but one can never tell because the second character in a one-man show is always the audience. So it depends on the audience response and how much tweaking needs to be done once it's in front of an audience. But yes, I would love for it to go to Broadway.
Now, you're a classically trained actor on the boards from the UK, but doing a one-man show, that can be pretty daunting when everything falls on you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me of that one. I haven't trodden the boards, as it were, for a while. But as you say, rightly say, my background is Royal Shakespeare Company, Vanessa Redgrave Company, other various repertory companies around the UK. I've toured around all over the world, actually, doing theatre, but I haven't touched theatre for a while. That, added with the fact that I'm up there on my own, I have a lot of empathy right now for stand-up comics. So, yes, it's going to be tough. I don't know. You know, as long as I stay in the moment and I tell the truth, I'm hoping that I'll sell through it.
Now, who do you anticipate your audience will be initially for this performance? And the reason why I bring that up is... You know, Onassis is a person who is a larger-than-life figure, a billionaire, married to a former first lady, but now there's an entire generation of people who probably don't even know who he was.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. In 97, I did a play about Edgar Allan Poe. It wasn't a one-man show, but obviously I played Poe, and he was the central figure. And I was surprised at the audience members that actually came to see the show. They were from 16, 17, 18, all the way through to 80. One can never tell. I think the play is about the human condition. You know, Onassis climbed to the top of the tree, like all of us really want to do. And Onassis says, I found that there was nothing there. And I think it's going to have a wide range of audience and ages. It appeals to a lot of people. I hope it'll appeal to a lot of people, because especially in this day and age, everyone dreams about having a lot of money, and all their problems will be solved if they have the money. Money can buy happiness. It can buy love. Well, you know, I think Onassis, his situation, the classic Greek tragedy, proves that that's not the case. So, you know, it's a story of love. It's a story of what he may have thought. He was in love with a certain woman, but perhaps he was in love with another woman. So I think it's going to have a wide audience.
Now, I initially mentioned in the introduction that you also worked on the short film Envelope with Kevin Spacey, which is a sweet little film. People can check it out on YouTube. What was that experience like, and what kind of response have you received from doing that film?
Okay, all right. I've worked with some of the greats of our age, including Vanessa Redgrave, who's won Oscars, and I've worked with Vlada Sabovica, who's won an Oscar for Best Foreign Film, Yugoslavian film. Working with Kevin Spacey is, I'm still, a big grin cracks across my face every time I think about that experience. You know, I'm open to learning, and I learned so much from that man. He is no wonder that he's won a couple of Oscars. He's just phenomenal as a man, and for me, and as an actor. And the reason that he did The Envelope and a couple of other movies were part of the Jameson First Shot competition. Jack Lemmon had told him to send the elevator down when he gets to the top to help other people. And it's exactly what he did with that movie. It was a short story written by a young Russian, Alexei Nureyev. And it was a competition that they chose one winner from South Africa, one from America, and one from Russia. The prize was that they came over to America and they had the opportunity to direct Kevin Spacey in the short story that they had written. So that in itself was just phenomenal, to be involved in something like that, and to work with such Trigger Street production company was an awesome experience in itself.
You mentioned you learned from Kevin Spacey, and with your background, with the work you've done in London, with the work you've done professionally, you still believe that you're still learning each and every day in your profession and your craft, correct?
Oh my, yes, absolutely. Because once I stop learning, once I close up, then I think my work will close up too. Kevin just reminded me, just watching him in a rehearsal that we did, that he justified every single word and linked it into a reality. Whereas in Britain, we might say, if you don't know what you're saying in Shakespeare, you say it loud and fast. And that was the complete opposite of Kevin. And, you know, when you're in the business for 20 years, like I've been, you know, you kind of forget things, you know. And then when you watch someone like that, just practicing the craft is mind-blowing.
Getting back to Onassis for a moment, you as I said, you've written this. It's a one-man performance. It must feel good to be kind of the master of your own destiny in this profession of acting, because a lot of people don't get that opportunity. Here you are writing the performance that you are going to give.
Right. And therein lies the rub, because you cannot ask who wrote this piece of crap as an actor. You know, it's like, I wrote this? Oh my, some days I'm like amazed that I was involved in the writing of it, as it were, because I was inspired to write it rather than I wrote it. I can't take full responsibility, if you understand what I'm saying. But it's taking different hats off. I have to take off the writer's hat and put on the actor's hat. And there is a big difference for me to do that. Anybody can sit down and write a show, write a one-man show and do it. It's seeing it through, that's the difficult part. You know, having the tenacity to just keep moving every time there's a block in the way.
So let me ask you this final question. What will make you happier when this play is on the boards? Reviews about your performance or reviews about your writing?
Oh, my performance. My performance. 100%. I say that now, but I'd want great reviews for both. But you know what? Depends on what side of bed the reviewer got out of that morning, I guess. One never knows.
Well,
you know, I'd love for it to be, you know, both. But if I had to make a choice, I would say for the acting, because I'm this is my first foray, as it were, into writing, which is why Willard Sims, who's won awards for Einstein, his one-man show, mentored me through it. So, hands down, the acting.
The play is called Onassis. It's going to be at the Stella Adler Theater from September 14th through to October 28th and hopefully beyond after that. People can find out more information by going to the website onassistheplay.info. And they can also go to your website, which is anthonyscordi.com. I thank you very much, Anthony, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you for having me.
Actor Anthony Scordi. You can visit the website onassistheplay.info to find out more information about the play, Onassis. And you can check out Anthony's website at anthonyscordi.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0154, and you'll find the links to both sites. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. If you've ever been to a Little League baseball game, you know that the only thing that may be more predictable than seeing a lot of batters strike out is seeing a lot of wild throws. 2 years ago, an 11-year-old catcher in New Jersey was warming up his pitcher when one of his throws hit a woman sitting near the fence. Unfortunately for the young ball player, his ball hit Elizabeth Lloyd, and she hired a lawyer. Lloyd decided to sue the boy, and not for a small amount, but for $500,000. Now, the boy's family is faced with huge legal bills and a lot of sleepless nights. Let's be fair. Lawsuits have become almost as common in America as baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. Sadly, we've grown accustomed to hearing about lawsuits over spilled drinks and just about everything else. But a lawsuit against an 11-year-old boy over a wild throw is a new low. And if that doesn't show that our justice system needs reform, I don't know what does. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, indeed, it is Peter Franklin once again, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Live from the very warm streets of New York City.
Yes, it's warm everywhere these days, which is, I guess, a good thing, unless you're one of those people who are really concerned about global warming.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, I understand there's a guy from Queens who really has some baggage issues.
Well, it's not one particular guy. It's a lot of guys. See, the problem is that New York City has a lot of airports. There are Kennedy Airport, LaGuardia Airport, Teterboro Airport, Islip Airport, Westchester County Airport. We got airports up the gazoo. And we have millions and millions of people passing through them each day. And because of that, you got an awful lot of people who have sticky fingers, mainly the people who work at the airport, strangely enough. So the problem is that the Port Authority police, who are responsible for this, just aren't doing their job. Oh, my goodness, will I be in trouble. You know, those are the guys who are supposed to chase down the gypsy cab drivers. Those are the people who are supposed to chase down the bad guys that mislead you foreigners. But they don't do their job. There, I said it, and I'm glad. So here's a little bit of a travel advisory. If you're going to be coming to an airport, New York City, before you arrive here, make a list of all the items that you have in your suitcases so that when you get to the hotel, you can open up your suitcases and see what's there and what isn't there. Yes, that's what they're doing. They're opening the suitcases and they're saying, one watch for the passenger, one watch for me.
Wow, so they're not even just taking the bag, they're being very selective with what's in the bag?
Yeah, of course. Why would you want crap in your house?
Wow, that's chutzpah, I guess, is one way of putting
it. That's right. It's a Gaelic word.
Exactly. Now, I understand you have, because you talked about the Port Authority police, I have an understanding that you have a bit of a concern with the regular cops, at least in case, in the terms of this story, about a cyclist who was given a ticket?
Yeah, the cop was parked in a bike lane, because he was inside probably getting his donuts. And so what happened is the kid on the bike complained about the fact that the cop shouldn't have put his car in the bike lane. So what the cop did was naturally give the kid a ticket for something or other. That's what you call instant retaliation. Now, the reason it turned into a big story is because of the fact that this is something that the NYPD Blue does an awful lot. They park in bus stops, which makes it impossible for handicapped people to get on the buses. They park next to fire hydrants, which doesn't make the fire department very happy. And by the way, I'm talking about incidences that have nothing to do with emergencies. This is just break time.
Oh, okay. So now that the story has made the news, do you know if this cyclist has to still pay this ticket or what's happened?
Yes, of course he will have to pay his ticket because the judge and the cop work for the same company.
Okay. One of the other things, you got a city with millions of people. And when you have that many people in a congested area, there tends to be some noise. Now, I understand there's some concern about noise in New York.
Yeah, tremendous amount of noise, especially during the summertime. And the reason for that is that it's the constant thum dum 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 thum dum 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 dum. That's my imitation of an air conditioner. It just goes on and on and on and on and on all over the city. Thousands, millions, maybe billions of air conditioners. And of course it just drives everybody crazy. So what you gotta do is go out and buy some cotton, stuff your ears, or wait until the wintertime comes.
Now, is somebody complaining about this? Is it an issue, or is it just something that you...
Yeah, no. I'm complaining about it. Isn't that enough?
Okay, that's fair enough. Fair enough. Okay.
You're right.
On another note, on a more serious note, I know you sent out a message from your website, which is Gabby.com, talking about the security at Batman movies. And you obviously have an opinion on this with what took place, the massacre in Colorado.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of grandstanding going on. The Warner Brothers, I contend, is absolutely delighted with the big box office that they're getting over it. The New York City police also grandstands by putting armed cops in New York City theaters that are showing the movie, which is absolutely ridiculous. But New Yorkers get up yesterday morning, decide they're going to start shooting up the theaters. You know, one wacko out of a country of more than 300 million should not get everybody. I mean, look, of course it's bad, but shouldn't get everybody just out of their mind. So, as usual with these types of things, there's a lot of people making a lot of bucks on it and trying to promote and hustle. The guy was crazy. I mean, what are you going to do?
Okay, but
that's what happens. You get crazy people.
Okay, but Warner Brothers, I mean, let's be honest. They were going to make a large amount of money with this movie anyway, and figures show that they probably would have made more if this did not happen.
I don't think so. I disagree with you, but that's all right. We can disagree at a cocktail party. I don't know that I want to disagree with you on your radio show, but you're crazy and you're wrong.
Okay, why am I crazy and wrong?
That's that blunt. Because they love it. If they love it, even if they didn't make a penny more, it's the numbers. I got more numbers than you got. You got more numbers than you. I mean, ultimately, of course, you as a broadcaster want to make money. There's no question about that. But at the same time, you kind of like the idea that you're top dog with the most listeners. Now, I'm not saying or proposing that you would be happy over a killing. I'm just saying what I know of and years of listening in on conversations to Madison Avenue types and movie types and television types, notice I'm admitting radio types, they love this stuff. Come on, it's a great story and they can just run with it.
Okay, let's get to a happier note then. I understand you have a wedding announcement of the week that's on your website. This is rather interesting. It has to do with holiday sweaters?
Yeah, well, it's some, I've stolen it from the New York Times, so it must be a copyright violation. Sorry to suck you into that, but who knows? The fact of the matter is that I've noticed each week when they have these wedding announcements in the New York Times, they're just so unbelievably bizarre. I mean, last week they had an announcement about a couple that met in the emergency room of a hospital. She was there for anxiety. He was there for tension. I mean, that shows that's going to be a great marriage. Well, this week's wedding announcement du jour or du week is the fact that this is a couple that met at the ugly sweater party. It seems that somebody had a party, and they announced that the person who comes wearing the ugliest sweater would win some type of prize. Maybe a nice-looking sweater. But in any event, these two people met there, and the rest is history. They both were wearing ugly sweaters. They didn't win, but they fell in love. Stay tuned for next week's New York Times wedding announcement.
Okay. And finally, the Olympic Games are just about to get underway in London. This is an Olympiad that New York had wanted. They lost coming in the vote behind Paris and Madrid.
That's the sound of an interruption to the talk show host.
Yes.
Nothing could be wronger than, is there such a word, than that. Most New Yorkers did not want the Olympics. The taxi industry didn't want the Olympics. The businesses didn't want the Olympics because it would have cost us a fortune, and we probably would have done as well as Salt Lake City, Utah did a number of years ago. So you're not exactly on the ball when you say we wanted it. But in any event, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You may now continue.
Okay. What I was saying is that you were in the running. There were several cities in the running, starting with, of course, London that got it. Paris came in second. Madrid came in third. New York came in fourth, and Moscow was behind you. So my question was, and I think you've just answered it, is are you sad that you didn't get the Olympics, which are now starting in London?
Oh, that's it. But Peter, you don't mind if I go here, Peter. The weeping that's going on in the streets is just unbelievable. People are just crying and crying. I understand there's some people laying on a bed of nails. Other people are eating ground glass. Oh, it's just so horrible. We're so upset. Listen, we hate the Brits anyway. Remember we had a war with them? This serves them right. All right? They can go bankrupt instead of us.
Nice way of putting it. And people can find out all the information they need to know and more by going to your website at Gabby.com. They could also send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Sir, it's always an enlightening pleasure to have you on the program.
Yes, and I'm sorry for picking on you, but I felt like being grumpy today.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost in the home stretch here on the Stuff File program. Of course, the idiot of the day is coming up in just a matter of moments, but I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you. You know you've got an especially annoying girlfriend when she causes you to risk your life by jumping from a moving car just to get away from her. In Madison, Wisconsin, a 34-year-old man was taken to hospital after jumping out of a moving vehicle because he couldn't stand bickering with his girlfriend any longer. Police said the man had taken his girlfriend out for her birthday, but they spent most of the night arguing in a dispute on a possible move to another state. Riding home in the back of a friend's car, he apparently couldn't stand it any longer and wanted to get out immediately. Oh, we've all been there. So instead of waiting for the car to stop, he opened the rear passenger door and leapt from the car onto busy East Washington Avenue. He then hit his head while tumbling from the moving vehicle and was taken to hospital with a brain bleed. An officer's report also indicated he was intoxicated. Yeah. I'm going on the assumption that this relationship is pretty much officially over. Anyway, let's get to our idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Jill Easter of Irvine, California, felt a volunteer at her son's school wasn't doing a very good job of supervising him. Police said she and her husband Kent therefore hatched a plot to get the unnamed volunteer fired. Kent allegedly drove to the volunteer's house late at night, planted illegal drugs in her unlocked car, and then went to a payphone to call 911 to report the contraband. Investigators figured it was a setup. The caller referred to the volunteer by name, and investigators zeroed in on the Easters after reviewing a motel security camera, which allegedly captured Kent making the 911 call. The Easters, both attorneys, have been charged with multiple felonies and face several years in state prison. Now, why would two morons hatch a plan to frame a school volunteer with such a harebrained I Love Lucy type scheme using illegal drugs and pointing out the victim by name in a 911 call from a payphone? And when you consider the fact that they're also attorneys? One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0154. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0154. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.